If you are like me and know that free enterprise is the greatest opportunity in the world, but you also see there are huge issues starting to arise, like why is mentorship decreasing in popularity? Why do entrepreneurs like us who love to succeed see people fail at the top and never leave true significance? And how do people like us make a lasting impact on the world? And is it possible for enough entrepreneurial leaders together to make a real difference? These are the blaring questions, and this podcast is the answer. Journey with me, your host, Christian. Together, we will challenge the status quo and conquer our legacies.
Thank you so much for tuning into Journey with Christian D. Evans podcast. This is your host, Christian D. Evans. And guys, we have someone that is, you know, I'm humbled to have him on because not only obviously his accomplishments in business and in life and what he's been able to accomplish, but why he's doing it for a larger purpose. And we're going to dive into that a little bit, but I'm just excited because obviously Christmas is around the corner, Thanksgiving's around the corner, holiday season. And there are certain things that, you know, we're going to be talking about today that's real close to his heart, but to see how he's able to accomplish his successes in life, leverage his successes, and accomplish significance in life. Guys, he is a kingdom-led entrepreneur with a thriving relationship who has generated over $2 million in revenue on e-commerce platforms, $2 million. His wife and himself strive to live their lives with a mission of thriving, not just surviving. How many times in the last year, guys, have we just survived, right? He takes this concept into business, homeschooling his 7-year-old son, and especially into his relationship with each other and his wife and his business partners. His mess has become his message. His journey from losing everything to 7-figure business owner continues to inspire others daily. And I'm so excited. Thank you so much for joining, Stephen Pemberton. How are you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that intro. That was amazing.
Well, man, that's all your accomplishments, man. So I'm really loving it, and I'm really excited to be having this conversation. But let's talk a little bit about obviously that journey. So, you know, introduce yourself. What was your struggle? What was that pain? You went from corporate America to now running several successful e-commerce business, and then obviously really achieving significance. But let's talk a little bit about that journey on the forefront.
So really, where that journey starts is at the age of 20. So I'm 28 now. So almost 8 years ago. My wife and I had just gotten married. We found out that our son was on the way, and I was working at the post office making $13 an hour part-time. My wife was working at her job, which was at the movie theater, which funny enough is where we met. She was my boss there when we first met. But at that time, she didn't want to go back to work. She was having our son. She wanted to stay home. So we started a little business. We were actually doing an MLM at that time. And so I'm sitting there, I'm working, and about 6 months later, I decided, you know, I've thought about it, prayed about it. I'm going to quit. I feel led and I'm quitting coming home. I had $500 in my bank account. I had absolutely zero skills and anything, like no sales experience. I had terrible social skills. So, if you're listening to this, you kind of know how this is going to go, but we ended up losing everything and having to move into a basement. And that's really where the story starts. And that's not where the story ends. And I think that that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. So talk a little bit about that. Obviously, you know, that first of all, humility, right? That was obviously a real, you know, slap in the face on your pride, right? Because you wanted to achieve it. So talk a little bit about that frustration, that feeling, and what were those steps to, you know, like you said, just the beginning of your journey.
So the way that felt, after losing everything, like I knew for sure that it was going to be successful. We were hanging out with the top income earners, doing all this stuff, but it never translated to anything for us. And in that time of living in this basement, not only did I feel like an absolute failure, not only as a business owner, but as a person, as a father. I mean, we couldn't even afford to give our son formula at 6 months old. I had to go and get carrots from Walmart, the dollar ones that they're trying to throw away, and grind those up and try to feed it to him because I couldn't afford formula. But the thing is in that time, the way that I interpreted it is different than my wife. And this is a big distinction for anyone who's in a relationship. Just because you're going through the same situation doesn't mean you're interpreting the situation the same. My wife was dealing with it radically different than me. We were both depressed people, hurt people. And unfortunately, I just didn't understand in that moment. But we've been able to work through that since then.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so let's talk a little bit about, like, obviously those next steps that you were able to obviously build the confidence, build the self-image, that you started realizing, okay, I failed, but I'm not a failure, right? And those kind of mindset transitions. How long did that take you to get out of that rut in your life, but also in your mindset?
So the biggest thing, when I first moved into that basement, my wife and I looked at each other and we said, we're going to be here for a month. That month turned into four. But the thing was, I remember coming home, I'd just gotten a job. I'd been working odd jobs to try to put food on the table, which wasn't working out great. But I remember walking in and she said, hey, I applied you for this job. I applied you for this corporate position. It's going to be making almost $16 an hour. It's yada, yada, yada. And I said, I don't think I'm going to get that. I don't have the experience, don't have the resume, didn't go to college. I said, I think you're barking up the wrong tree, basically. I was kind of throwing her under the bus. But turns out she was right. She said, you're going to get this job. And I did. And that is where it shifted. We went from the basement. I just started this job first month in. We move out. We move into this terrible place on literally, not just metaphorically, but literally on the wrong side of the train tracks. And that was a great starting point to launch us into the next chapter of our life.
Now let's talk about that next chapter. What did that look like, and what were those next steps?
So the next steps is when I moved into that corporate job and to this new house on the wrong side of the railroad tracks, was I ended up going from working, I don't know, odd jobs, maybe 30 hours a week, to working over 60, 70 hours a week immediately. So there was days I was leaving that home, going to the corporate position and crying, if I'm being completely open about it, because I hated that job. I was starting base level. I was working in a warehouse, destroying my body every single day just to put food on the table. But my number one guiding principle was the fact that I knew I had to put food on the table. There was no one else doing it for me. So I had to go work that job. Now, the things that gave me the confidence down the road, because working 21-hour shift in one day, that was not building my confidence. But my boss came to me at that time and he said, hey, I see how hard you're working. I just want to let you know that if you keep on this path, that you could actually move up here. And I never heard that before. I always heard you had to have the college degree. You have to know someone who knows someone to help you move up. And he said, no, you can actually work hard, take on some extra responsibility and move up. And that's what helped start building my confidence.
Definitely. That's awesome, man. And obviously, you know, how has building your confidence and your self-esteem been able to obviously translate into the e-commerce business that you have now? And how did you get into e-commerce? What did that transition look like?
So the way that transition happened was I was in corporate for about 6 years. So that was the beginning of the story, was me working that job 21 hours. But towards the end of my career, I had moved from Chattanooga, Tennessee, if anyone knows where that is, little town at the bottom of Tennessee, if you look at it on a map, to Fort Worth, Texas, all the way to another little town called Tyler, Texas. And in Tyler, Texas, it was May of 2020. My wife and I had actually already been running an Amazon business for about a year or two that had already produced over seven figures. But we had, if I can be completely honest to everyone listening to this, we had completely blown through all those profits, sitting there and going all over the place because we're like, hey, cool, money, let's do stuff. So we had blown through all that. But at the end of 2020, last year, May 2020, I started having really bad anxiety attacks. I was still working the job, but I had really terrible anxiety attacks for the first time in my entire life. So not even losing everything and going into the basement had done that. And I just remember very well, it was June 9th, 2020, and I'm standing in the mechanic shop. We've been working 14 hours on our way to 17-hour shift. And I just felt led that it was time. It was time to quit. It was time to come home and run that business. And that's how we transitioned. And to just give background on the Amazon business, my wife is the one who actually founded that one a couple years before. So we had no e-commerce experience at all. But she was the one who put her nose to the grindstone and really started understanding and building that about 2 years prior to me quitting that job.
Wow, that's That's incredible. And obviously, like you said, to have that seven figure. So let's dial back into the you know, FBA, right? Fulfilled by Amazon, Amazon store. What did that trajectory look like? And obviously we don't have your wife on here right now, but obviously you were part of that existence. So what did that look like? And obviously, you know, identifying what product, identifying the right skills to acquire, to be able to actually leverage. Cause I hear a lot of people that are buying, you know, courses to figure out how to do that. But they don't know how. And it's obviously a very dog eat dog world right now because of the competition, but obviously you guys have scaled it and you know, was it just the right time at the right moment, or was it like, what skills did you have to have, and finding that the product, the niche, the right service, the thing, all that stuff. Just let's talk a little bit about that detail.
So here's some big insider knowledge. A lot of people want to get started on Amazon and they think, okay, because when you first get started, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about getting into Amazon, is the barrier to entry is very high. You usually have to have some kind of capital. You usually open your account and you're gated. Gated just means you cannot sell certain things. But the number one category you are ungated in, for the most part, is toys. So everyone thinks, okay, I'm gonna go make it big in toys, but everyone's in toys. So that's the number one key, is don't, unless, now this is the caveat, is if it's Q4, you can do toys, because Q4, everyone's looking for toys for Christmas. But if it's any other time of the year, don't start your business and think that you're going to leverage toys to be able to help move you forward.
Okay, definitely. And so let's talk about, like, you know, kind of intricate details, like the metrics, right? Certain things that, you know, because a lot of our audience are individuals that have, you know, have a very successful business. They do $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month, and they do all right, but they want to scale to seven figures and beyond. And so let's talk a little bit about, like, you know, the metrics, the KPIs that allowed you, okay, what's, you know, how did you find the fulfillment? I mean, obviously the fulfillment, but how did you find the manufacturer? How were you able to develop all that infrastructure and making sure, okay, hey, and were you running any ads to your FBA store at all?
So for Amazon, no, we were not running any ads. The big thing that we found to be an advantage for us was wholesaling. Wholesaling was great. I mean, especially in the niche that was very strong for us, which could be very strong for anyone listening to this, was beauty. Now, and I understand, like, for my wife, she loved it, but at the same time, is there's not a ton of people ungated in beauty. So if you're able to get ungated in that category, then you have a bigger opening. Then for us finding wholesalers, it was honestly just as easy as going and Googling it. And that sounds crazy, but there's actually really good wholesalers you can find by just Googling wholesale beauty or wholesale toys, wholesale whatever. And that was the way for me. I was the one who had to go find all the wholesale contacts. And that's how I started. I would do that, or I would go find a reputable brand that I liked, and I would go down and I'd contact them. Hey, do you wholesale? And yes, you're not going to get a response from everyone, but it only takes one good client, one good customer for you to be able to make good profit.
Well, let's talk about profit a little bit and cash flow. So, yeah, because I know, you know, FBA, Amazon has a lot of different, you know, hidden fees, if you will, that obviously eat up into your profit. And, you know, I know that they are focused a lot on cheaper products and stuff like that. So how were you able to, you know, turn profit? Was it more volume, or was it each item you were cash flowing? What did that look like?
So for us, over the span of about 2 to 3 years, we did different business models in Amazon, so we kind of understand each one. But we started with drop shipping, as I imagine a lot of people do. You start with drop shipping. It's the easiest one to get into, also one of the easiest ones to get shut down in. But drop shipping, your margins are paper thin. And I mean, 10 to 15% is really about as much as you're going to make. So even if you make an amazing seven-figure year, like, that's $1 million, and that sounds great, but at 10%, that's $100,000. So, and a lot of that, you're still going to have to pay taxes. You still got some, you know, you're still paying for your softwares, your VAs if you have them. So it's really even less than that. And that's really how we got started. We're just seeing those tiny itty-bitty margins. And the thing that a lot of people won't talk about is the fact that those, just like you said, those selling fees really do eat into that. For Amazon, I believe it's 15% per sell. So 15% is a huge amount. So if you're selling something for 100, then immediately you're only making 85. So you've got to be able to plan around that 15% being taken out.
So let's talk about that. So what have been some of your intricate strategies to make sure, okay, you drop down expenses, right? There's only two ways: drop down expenses and increase the price, right? In order to get that margin, you know, right. Now it's tough because obviously you're not able to create an offer. You're not really able to create upsells and downsells on the back end. So what were some of your strategies? And also I know that you're not able to gather that client's email and SMS so you can market them with other products later on. So what were some of your strategies to make sure your profit margins? Was it just really identifying that niche and identifying the right product for that niche? Or what were some of your hidden tricks, if you will?
So one of the biggest hidden tricks that I got taught by my wife, which is something that we didn't see basically anyone do, was bundling. So bundling looks like if I'm on a website, if I'm on a wholesaler's website, and let's say they have four items in a bundle that I can get, is we don't just say, because people do this where they'll buy a bundle, they list it on Amazon as a bundle. Okay, cool. But what if you took the bundle and you individually priced out what are those things selling for individually? Because what we found is that you could get things in a bundle cheaper from your wholesaler or even from a normal website, normal sales website. And each one of those products would be greatly discounted comparatively to how it was selling on Amazon. So maybe it's four different kinds of toothpaste, let's just say, and each one of them together equals $20, and you could sell it for 25, 30, let's say 30. But if each one you actually looked and they were selling, their BSR was very low. So closer to that, you know, the lower the BSR, the better. So let's say all those had lower BSRs and you were able to see that, oh, they're actually selling for $7-$8 a piece. So then you're actually making more money by breaking up that bundle instead of bundling it together.
And see, there's a lot of validity to that because I was actually talking, I had a really cool YouTube training a few weeks back that I explained this, what you just said, a bundle and offer, right? Because you think about Valentine's Day, right? You have these, all these pieces of chocolate and all this, it's 99 cents. But when you put it all together, you bundle it up, you put a little bow on it. Now all of a sudden they're selling it for $29. And you're sitting there going, what? You know, it's like five pieces of chocolate, but they're sold it for $29. Why? And guess what? A lot of us are stupid enough to keep buying it, right? Men and women. And the reason why is because we don't want to have to bundle it. So now it's already nice and pretty and cute and all that stuff. And I think just to validate what you're saying, it's actually really remarkable. So those are one of your strategies. So by doing that, let's get in some numbers. At what point did you realize that and you started implementing that? And then what was the profit margin? Was that a 30, 40, 50% increase that you saw in revenue just by doing that? Or what were the end results on that?
So from bundling in itself, we got to see our margins go from that about 20, 25% to more along the lines of about 35%. Because with bundling, we were able to do it a couple of different ways. Just like you said, is either bundling it together or taking a bundle and breaking it apart. And that was the thing, was almost reverse engineering what some people were already doing. People are already bundling it and selling it for either a higher cost or a cheaper cost. And so we just reverse engineered those things to find better profit margins.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think that's brilliant. And I love that because I think you'll help a lot of people. Because once, just like you said, what I found very interesting in e-commerce, I've run my own e-commerce, is you don't realize fulfillment, all of a sudden that cost, shipping and handling, all of a sudden that cost. And the thing is you can either give it back over to your customer and have them take the brunt of that cost, or you have to just take the brunt of the cost by leveraging through leveraging the expense of that product, right? You can't increase the price. So let's talk a little bit about this. You know, because Amazon is a third party, I've heard people where they do very well, but then all of a sudden they wake up and Amazon has said, hey, you're no longer your account. How do you stay in cahoots? How do you stay good, two thumbs up, with Amazon and making sure that they don't close your account all of a sudden?
Okay, so this is going to be a two-part thing because A, we have been shut down, and B, we have figured out how to either transition. That's kind of what we did. Now we do sell on Amazon, but we have transitioned to a different platform that's a little bit more inviting but still has crazy numbers. But with Amazon, here's what we have found. Is everyone talks about drop shipping and how bad it is. And it's like, you know, that's the black sheep thing, but you can make money quickly, but that's the one that's going to get you shut down. And we did that and got shut down, but we got our account back instantly almost. Now we did wholesaling, and through wholesaling, we actually got shut down for almost a year. And we were actually doing everything right. And the thing was, is just as you said, we woke up one day and our account was completely shut down. And the reason why is because they said that the wholesaler that we used, even though they were a wholesaler and they sold us actual real stuff, they said because they didn't have a certification of wholesaling for that brand that they could find on record that we were getting shut down. And it was crazy to me that if we being shut down through drop shipping, if you have receipts showing I bought this from Macy's, then they're like, okay, good enough, because they at least know it's valid. But if you're wholesaling, and this is just caution to anyone listening, if you're wholesaling and you are going down the street and you see someone, hey, wholesale blowout sale, okay, cool, I'm gonna buy all this stuff. But if you buy all that stuff and you send it into Amazon and for some reason someone flags it as a fake and you cannot prove the validity of it by saying, oh yeah, the manufacturer certified those people who I bought it from, then you're going to be in this huge mess.
Wow. I appreciate you sharing that, because you're coming with experience and actually being in that situation. So I think a lot of people need to have that realization, because these platforms you don't own, right? You don't own Facebook, you don't own YouTube, but what's so nice is to get that customer off that platform and obviously getting their contact. So let's talk about obviously how you're pivoted now to the new platform that you're using now.
So for us, the biggest pivot we were able to make was about this time last year to Facebook. And I'm sure some people have talked about it, but there's something now that they came out with last year, which is shipping. So on Marketplace and in shops, they allow you to do shipping. Now, I'm sure everyone who's hearing this has heard Craigslist and different things like that to go pick up stuff locally. And Facebook Marketplace was a great place to do that too. Oh, I need a new table, let me go check Marketplace. But now you can actually ship. So now I don't have to be in the same city as Christian to be able to ship him something. He wants to buy something from me, he can buy it straight from me. I send it to him. And that's been a huge advantage, especially when we started, because there was no fees. So for the first 6 months of us being in business, there was no fees at all. And now their fees are 5%. So if you're coming from Amazon and you have e-commerce experience, Facebook is literally going to save you 10% just because of you coming to their platform. So I thought that was huge for us.
So let's talk about that. Do you drive any ads? Or is it just all SEO onto your Facebook, profile or whatever? What does that look like?
So what that looks like right now is no, we have not run any ads, but we've been able to do 7 figures with it, just strictly because this is a platform that has the most users in the world, even more than Amazon. And that's built in. Pretty much everyone has a Facebook. And the thing that's really cool about that is because they've had Facebook shops, but they didn't really integrate that well until recently. With Facebook shops, you can post stuff and you don't even have to use your own personal marketplace, which is how we started. It started with personal. Don't really like that too much, but Facebook shops, you can actually run it as a business. You can put your LLC in, you can be taxed as a business. You can do it all as a business. You can actually, really cool feature that just came out with is something you mentioned earlier, but now you can actually make an email list from your customers on Facebook. So you don't need, even through that, third-party integrations, none of it. You can actually do it all through Facebook. But the fact of the matter is they had so much organic. We have so much organic traffic just because it's showing up in people's news feed. I mean, if anyone's heard of all the stuff going on with Facebook right now and all the litigation against them, it's actually been great for sales. Just being honest. So that's something that's great that's with awesome. Facebook is that they will target you with items like, hey, we saw that you looked at Little Betty toys 10 months ago. Here's a Little Betty toy that Steven's selling for this price. And so it's like, oh, okay, cool. Let me look at that. And that's been really game changing for us, because we still haven't had to set aside this huge marketing budget to be able to figure out how we're going to drive sales.
So right now, what you're saying basically is because they want to promote their e-commerce platform, if you will, that's associated with Facebook. Now what they're doing is they're creating a lot of organic reach to and for your product. So all you have to do is push it on there, and you obviously put in specific, like what this is, blah, blah, blah. And then organically, it'll get out in front of people that already are interested in what you have to offer. And that's what you have seen. And then as well as the percentage that Facebook takes is only 5% compared to 15%. And then as well as like, what is that? Because I'm not familiar with Facebook too much in regard to that aspect. Do they hold that client's credit card information on profile? And is it very streamlined for them to check out? Like all they have to do is just, you know, click the pay now and it already automates that process. Does Facebook have that? Or do they have to come to a checkout, you integrate it with Stripe and the money is, or another merchant account? What does that look like?
So the way that works now, so what you're saying right there, that is actually how Facebook shops used to work. So it used to be on Facebook shops. It was a whole separate tab, a whole separate thing. And let's say I had a Shopify store, right? And I'd integrated it with Facebook shops. And you wanted to buy that little Betty toy I talked about earlier, is you would click on it. And then it would either send you out to that Shopify page, or it would send you to basically that Stripe account. You can put in your information. But now with shops and with personal marketplaces, now that they're integrated, I just press buy now, and I can use my PayPal account, or I can use my card saved on file.
Okay. Wow. That's because what I found very interesting, and definitely specifically like even with YouTube, I know, and even Amazon, right? They have this, when you're a Prime member, they have all your credit card and everything like that. All they have to do is click. So what it does is eliminates, that process for that client to keep it very simple and easy. And so basically what I'm trying to say is that, you know, Stephen, have you seen a massive uptick because it is very streamlined? You don't have to worry about them having to take their credit card, put it in, blah, blah, blah. Obviously the, those results, because it's streamlined, all they have to do is click on PayPal, click on once, boom, and they just sent it and they just bought it from you. Have you seen that uptick drastically? I mean, let's talk like bottom line, what's the results and what's the return on investment that you're seeing because of this new strategy?
So as far as with that strategy alone, I'm not entirely sure as far as what those numbers are, just because the biggest thing that is the biggest difference for us is, let's say that you and I were both going to sell Little Betty toys. I don't know why that's the thing that I came up with, but on Amazon, if we were both going to sell it, is you would be a seller on one listing, right? But with Facebook, that's not the case. If you and I are selling the same thing, we can use different pictures, use different listings, use different everything. And that will, and so really it depends on the user then. It depends on the customer. What we found has been huge for us is basically lifestyle photos. If you've ever been on Amazon, their picture is always a white background. It's always a picture of the item. It's not very lifestyle. But on Facebook, because we can put whatever picture we want, we will have, let's say, that toy with a kid playing with it, or that toy sitting on the playground, or whatever it is. That way it's like, oh, okay. Let's say it's home decor. It's like, okay, I could see how I would put that shrub by my front door because of this picture, instead of it just being a shrub and a white background. So that's been the biggest key. And for us going from Amazon to Facebook, we saw it from like 30-35% margins to where we're now well over 40% margins on Facebook, 40-45. So there's even been months where we're at 50, just strictly because of the fact that competition is lower than Amazon. You don't have to worry about getting ungated. The fees are less on shops right now. There's no selling fees on shops until June 16th of 2022. So that means that there's no 5%. So right now, anything through shops is making me more money than anything on my own marketplace. So we've seen that has given us the biggest uptick, is just the fact that the fees are less. Customers are buying with their eyes quicker because I'm not having to go get ungated for a ton of things, and that the fees are being waived even in some circumstances.
So let's talk a little bit about, like, obviously, you know, the fulfillment on the back end then. So because you're not leveraging Amazon, which obviously when you buy, you know, 10,000 units, it's in a warehouse of Amazon's, right? What does that look like now in regard to that? Do you have to integrate another system to be able to say, okay, this, you know, we have your own manufacturing and as well as your own fulfillment to make sure that, okay, hey, this is being sent out. What does that look like?
So the biggest way is that you can leverage that is either A, we've done that in the past where we just, you know, we use USPS or UPS, any of those big ones, because something that you can do that's pretty neat is you can, it, through Facebook, is you can still just put it as your own personal shipping. So that way you get to pick your shipper. You don't have to use whoever they want you to use. Also, a big component is like a third-party fulfillment, is finding good 3PLs that can ship quickly. We use one called Deliver. Deliver is getting to the point where nationwide they have 1 to 2 day shipping, same as Amazon. So that has been a way for us to either keep pace or to even beat some shipping times by using these different aspects.
Okay, definitely. All right. I mean, that's remarkable. Now, have you ever tried any strategies with Walmart and their e-commerce platform? I know they're trying to, you know, kind of keep up with the times a little bit. What's your thoughts on that?
So with Walmart, we heard about Walmart before Facebook and we wanted to jump on board. I mean, we'd had a successful Amazon business. It seemed like the thing that we would transition to, but we couldn't get approved for one. And then we were talking to people and they said, well, I just made a Shopify store with just like a title and they gave me a store. And we had a full blown Shopify website with categories and different products and all the backstory. And we just couldn't get approved for anything. So we never even had the chance, but we did know people who were in Walmart who ran into a lot of the similar issues as Amazon, where they would sit there and get shut down for no reason. And I think it's very interesting that that's been happening over there as well.
Well, that's what I find very intriguing, because it sounds to me like very similar to Facebook a little bit in regard to their ads platform. We were running a lot of ads many years ago on Facebook and they kept shutting our stuff down. We weren't doing anything wrong. And obviously what happens is it slows down the whole process of you making money, right? When all of a sudden your whole system shuts down, you're like, oh gosh, what's happening, right? And I understand that frustration. That's just cool that you're leveraging Facebook Shops in that regard. That's actually producing a really, really remarkable results, almost, you know, double, triple kind of the results that you're seeing. And obviously getting that other third party. Let me ask you, do you have any training in systems and processes that you and your wife are kind of sharing with your audience to make sure that these people can also leverage that other strategy?
Yes. So for us, we actually have the thing called the Marketplace Edge. My wife and I are the founders of that. And that was the way for us to basically give back and show how we're doing the things that we're doing. Because, and the thing is the biggest aspect of that is we actually show exactly our shops. We show my personal marketplace. You're actually seeing live what I'm doing, because I don't want it to be this thing where it was a course that was good 10 years ago, but I'm trying to use it today and it doesn't work. Because I want to show you this is what's working, this is what's not working, these are the problems we've run into. Even for our people, if they run into issues, a great example is this lady who, she could not get her shop approved. For whatever reason, she couldn't get it approved. So we got access to her account and we shared screen and we walked her through it as we were messing with it, and we sent the request and were approved within 10 minutes and were able to get her shop. And that's simply from experience. I don't have a secret person like, hey, man, improve this shop for me. But I wish I did, but I don't. It's just the fact of trial and error. We've been through it. We've opened multiple shops. We've done great 7 figures this year. But at the same time, that's all through trial and error. So we want to try to speed up that process for other people.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. That's awesome that you guys have that training, because you're exactly right. I mean, because I don't know how much time, but also how much money you've invested trying to figure it out. And now that you have something so solidified and something systematic, it's like, wow, this is unbelievable. And I do also know that you have to hit it at the right time. You know, Amazon, 5 years ago, man, that was awesome. People were just making a ridiculous amount. And now it's just a high competitive situation. And then obviously hitting this situation with Facebook, they want to have, what I found very interesting about that system, they want to keep their audience on that platform, because the more they stay on that audience, on that platform, the more they make more money and so forth and so on. So I love that. So what other different strategies do you leverage? Any sales funnel strategies, upsells, downsells, and all that shenanigans, ClickFunnels community and all that?
So for Facebook, we don't. But the cool thing about Facebook, that especially shops, I am a huge proponent of shops. You can make, now if you need to make quick money, and you want to make money, let's say you just left a job and you were trying to start a business and you're trying to leverage something on the side. is Facebook Marketplace, personal marketplace is super fast for you to be able to turn profit because you're not having to set up anything. With Shop, it takes a little bit longer, especially if you've never done it. So I just want to share with the audience that which this isn't an overnight success kind of thing. With shops is if you've never made one, you have to create a page. And then once you create a page, you go and create a shop. And then your shop is basically sitting there for 30 days getting approved. So if you've never done it before, 30 days. Now with personal marketplace, if you've had a Facebook for any length of time, especially over 90 days, then you have access to marketplace to buy and to sell. So if you're looking to get started and you just want to figure out, okay, how do I sell things on Facebook? That's where I would start. And you could even start as easily as selling things around your house. And you don't even, again, going back to what I said earlier, is you don't even have to sell it to your next door neighbor or to Billy down the street. You can actually ship it now. So you're getting an understanding of how that supply chain works from you to the post office to them.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, man. That's awesome. And so, you know, let's talk a little bit about, like, obviously when you were first developing all this, right? Did you ever think that, like, wow, you know, going from, you know, in a basement to all of us on the wrong side of the tracks to now you run several seven figure and you're just, you know, popping off and just all these skills that you've acquired over the years. What would you say, like, when you're really dialing this in, is it the offer? What do you spend when you develop a new product or a new offer or a new niche? What do you spend majority of your time on that'll create the best return on investment? Like a lot of people, what I find very interesting is that they focus too much on the logo or the color of the button or things that really are irrelevant compared to what actually produces the best result. So when you're developing and getting into a new niche, what do you and your wife spend majority of your time on that gets the best return on investment?
So that's a great question because I do absolutely agree. I actually have a family member who that is their problem where they just sit there and they spend 10 years coming up with a product plan and okay, what is my logo and my title? What is the name of the LLC? It's like, just do something, just get started. Because with us, what we found and the reason why we were able to be successful quickly was not just because we found the opportunity at the right time. That was a part of it. I don't want to sit there and say it wasn't. But at the same time is looking at what is selling. It's okay. If the little Betty toy again is selling all the time, I see different variants of that kind of toy or different variants of that set, then I know that that is something people are interested in. Let's say it's a niche like home decor. If I sit there and I'm seeing, oh, everyone's okay. Let's use a real example with Home Depot. A few weeks ago, right before Halloween, they got in their first shipment of Halloween decor and it was gone in 3 days, completely sold out. So that tells me that the market is hungry for home decor. That tells me that whenever the next shipment comes in, it's most likely going to sell out again. And so for me, as I'm looking at trends, not only on Facebook, but I'm looking at trends on Home Depot. I'm looking at trends on Walmart. What are things that are selling out? Because if these things are selling out, then that lets me know that this is a niche where people are very interested in. Because I've found personally, there's been times that we've done this where we're like, okay, this product's gonna be great. We think it's gonna blow up, but we didn't pay enough attention to see if people were actually buying stuff in the space. So then it launches and it does, and we are upset, but we didn't do enough of actual market research is really what it's called. Is just do a little bit of market research before you get started and figure out where are the customers now.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that because see, what I also found is, now let's talk about those trends. So, you know, obviously they come and go so quick, right? But also there are some that obviously are lengthy trends. And I've known where, you know, a lot of e-commerce throughout their store, throughout their life of their company, they go into a niche, they explode it, and then they leave and they go to the next one, right? And there's always trends, right? Focusing on those. So with that being said, now that you have those skills that you know how to get a fulfillment, product, manufacturer, all that stuff, how do you identify which trends to focus on that actually will be there for a little length of time? And those that are only going to be there like one day, 2 days. And maybe that's kind of like a minute, you know, question, because I don't think trends are that quick. But my question really comes down to how do you identify ones that are actually maybe be the length of, you know, maybe over six months or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer that question by stating something that probably everyone has seen, which is a fidget spinner. When a fidget spinner first started, that was a huge trend. But the thing with that trend was that it wasn't patented. So everyone was able to get in on it quickly. So the thing about trends is not only is it blowing up, but am I the second person in line? If you're not, if you see 100 different people selling a fidget spinner, then most likely that trend has already left. Because by the time you get on the train, maybe you capture some sales, but most likely it's already going to pivot into something else. For me, I see fidget spinners at the gas station sitting by the cash register now. It's not this huge trend. Now it's Poppets. So a couple of things you could look at with trends is A, okay, I see that this trend is blowing up, but I didn't get on the train in time. But where is it going? So the big thing is that with fidget spinners is all of a sudden there's this huge explosion for sensory toys. And so if you, especially this is me talking to me, if I would have seen this as fidget spinners started, then I could have seen ahead of time, why are fidget spinners so big? Because they intrigue kids and they intrigue adults who just want to sit there and mess with something. So what is the next iteration of that? Now, the next iteration of that was Poppets, which is basically just infinite bubble wrap, if we're being completely straightforward. So, but the first person to make Poppets, they are now wildly successful because they saw the future of the trend that's happening now.
Okay, and that makes perfect sense. So also, what trend data research or tools do you use to be able to identify those? I know you just mentioned, you know, you go on Home Depot, you go on Amazon, you go on Walmart, you actually look at a bestseller. You know, every website has those, right? You can literally filter bestsellers, right, and identify what's trending. But let's talk a little bit more. So there's some incredible tools out there. What tools do you use?
So right now, the biggest tools that we've been using is basically just, for me, it's just been my eyes. If I'm just being straightforward, it's literally just going on and not only just seeing what's selling well on those websites, but actually checking the news. So I don't check the news to see what's going wrong in the world because that's not helping me. But I go to the business section of the news to figure out, okay, there's 100 container ships stuck in the port off of LA. So that means that lets me know that if I'm manufacturing something right now in China, let's say I found a manufacturer through Alibaba and I'm having them make me something, is it's going to be stuck out in the port for months. So now I know that, okay, I can't manufacture something new. So what can I do in the States? How is the supply chain looking in the States? And then I can see what the trends are there. Is the trends in the supply chain, is it choked? Is there a chokehold on that? And then if there's not, where is things selling out? So not only am I looking at those bestsellers on those different big brand websites, but I'm also checking the supply chain because the supply chain will let you know what the market looks like too.
Okay, definitely. Which is interesting because I've heard a lot of individuals, they you know, like one individual I was listening to, they take the trend of like what's sexy in clothing and then a trend in the product and they bring it basically together and sell that because obviously that trend is working. And then also she focuses it on niche. But anyways, that's very interesting and I appreciate you just bringing a macro kind of mindset to it and dialing that in. Now, let's talk a little bit about this because obviously – my man, you're a faith-based kind of guy, and I love that. And obviously, you've achieved great successes in life. But what I really enjoy what you were saying before we jumped on this podcast is that you want to live a significant life and what you're passionate about, what you're truly passionate about, which is, you know, underprivileged kids during this Christmas time. And what I'd love to do is just kind of what you're doing, man, right now, and why that is so impactful, why that's so big on your heart, man.
So this was actually a mission that my cousin started a few years ago. And the story of the first kid he was ever able to help was what is so impactful to me. And I want to share that with everyone here is my cousin. He was reached out. There was someone reached out to him. It was a teacher of the school. And she said, hey, there's a kid in my class. He has been wearing the same outfit for the entire year. And I think that he would be the person that you need to help the most. Because he had told her his mission. So he was able to buy this kid all sorts of clothes, almost $200-$300 worth of clothes. He was able to buy him Christmas. This kid and his father were living in a motel where there was drugs and alcohol and all sorts of things that were just not good for a child. And he was able to provide a Christmas for this kid who only had one outfit. He didn't think anyone cared enough for him. He was being bullied at school. But my cousin was able to provide that. And that was the story that led me to align with him last year. And the whole point for this mission is there's kids out there who are hurting. There's kids out there who don't think that it's possible for them to have a Christmas this year. They can see that they haven't had a meal in a day, that their mom or their dad is gone all the time trying to make ends meet even, and just can't. And the biggest mission that we have right now is helping those kids. So last year we were blessed enough to help over 38 underprivileged kids. This year we're on a mission to help over 100. And every single donation that comes in that we have through this nonprofit goes straight to the kids. It doesn't go to us. There's no administration costs. We don't do all that. We want to make sure that these kids, it translates, your dollars translate to helping a kid.
That's awesome, man. And obviously to see you've been able to impact 38 individuals and your goal is 100, this year, that is very, very doable. And so, and tell us a little bit about like the stories that you've been able to impact, because, that individual has, the children have that because of what you've been able to produce.
For us, as we get the presents, we wrap them, we put from Santa, we don't let them know it's from us, and we drop them off at the school, and the school distributes it. We're not even there. So I actually don't know the seeds. I actually don't know what is happening with these kids, because I don't want to be known for helping in any way. I want these kids to feel, and we want to make it this way, because we make it to where it's from Santa, so, and we let the parents have the gifts, because we want the parents to feel empowered to say, hey, we got you Christmas. We don't have to have it to where it's like, hey, this came from this nonprofit. No, if we want the parents to feel good about giving their kids presents. So we haven't heard the stories. My cousin told me a story of a parent last year who, when they came to pick up the gifts and we weren't there, was in tears because they had lost their job because of COVID, and they knew that they weren't going to be able to provide Christmas. And they just thought the world of that mission. Now, of course, we weren't there for it, because we drop off, we leave, because we don't want to be the face of it. We want these kids and the parents to be impacted by the mission, not by us.
And that's awesome, man. And Stephen, now because you've been able to create, success for yourself and enough, right, for yourself, how does that feel to be in a situation where now you can put a lot of your time, your resources, your energy towards something that you're truly passionate about and you really want to see a massive, larger result with it?
So for anyone listening, whenever you get to that level of success that you're looking for, just realize it's not all for you. For me is once, reaching seven figures, I work from home, e-commerce now. It's amazing. I get to homeschool my son and I've been to Disney World and Disneyland this year, but doing all those things is cool. But knowing that the money is coming to me so I can give it away to help people who are not as privileged as me. I'm no one special. I didn't create a thing. I'm not Elon Musk. I'm not super smart. But I know that for me, when the funds hit my bank account, is I think, who can I help with it? Because it's not just for me. And that's the biggest thing for anyone out there, is just knowing who you can help with it. As you become a bigger opportunity in your own life, there's going to be opportunities for you to help someone else.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And just to see what you're doing in that story from, like you said, be living in a basement, to being on the wrong side of the tracks and getting some $16 an hour, not that much, right? To now all of a sudden you acquire and develop skills to now run your businesses, and now you're impacting. Now tell me, man, obviously that's your goal for 100, this year. How can my audience reach out to you? How can they engage with you? How can they be part of that mission?
So the best way to do that, because the website to this nonprofit we partner with is like ridiculously long, and we're working on that for next year, but is reach out to me on my Instagram, Stephen K. Pemberton there, or just hit me up on Facebook at Stephen Pemberton, or Twitter, same thing, Stephen Pemberton, because then I'll be able to interact with you one-to-one. I'll be able to get you connected with that mission, because again, like I said, website name, crazy long. We're going to get that dialed in next year. But the mission is 100 kids, and we're tracking to be able to do that. But we just don't want to put a limit on what's possible. We know that if you are led to give the way that we are led to give, that we're not going to limit it to, oh, okay, 100 kids, we're going to cut it off, we're just going to save the money for next year, help more. Like, no, we're going to go and find the needs, because there's needs all around this country, not just in our city, that for underprivileged kids. There's underprivileged kids everywhere. So we just don't want to put the cap of 100 on it.
I love it. I love it. Because obviously, you know, when you hit 100, then all of a sudden you're like, man, let's do 1,000. Let's do 10,000. Let's do 1,000,000, right? Let's do 10 million, right? And then empower those individuals to build and produce. And you definitely can. And I love that vision. I love what you got going on. And guys, those links will actually be in the description below. So you make sure you click on Instagram. Make sure. And I will also, if you send this over to me, I will actually include that larger link in the description below, so that make sure that they can easily click, go directly to that website, but also reach out to Stephen here so you can communicate with him, get to know him a little bit, and get be part of this whole system. I highly recommend it. One of the things I always tell people is, like, during this time of you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, it's all about family, right? Enjoying it. It's all about gifts and all that fun stuff, but also really instill the values to your kids about showing how you give back to the community, right? Definitely for those that have been very successful in your life and empower others and impact others. And that's really what it comes down to, having the freedom, but also impacting others. So Stephen, I really appreciate your time being on here, man, and diving into some of those articulate skills and understanding those metrics and all the ins and outs of things. And then also what you're doing with this organization, nonprofit. But before we let you go, is there any other last words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our audience?
If there's anything I want to leave you with today, is just become a bigger opportunity. Take the time to learn the skills you need to learn to be able to grow and expand. Don't just be stuck in this mindset, as I was at one time, where I just need enough. Because what is enough? If enough is just for you, you're thinking too small. Think bigger, because there's people out there who are waiting for you to become an opportunity, so that way they can be impacted. So that's what I want to leave you with, is just continue to expand, continue to push yourself, because there's people waiting for you to be the blessing and the answer to their prayers.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Stephen Pemberton. And my man, thank you so much for joining. And guys, make sure you share this with your friends, your family, your colleagues, your coworkers, your neighbors, your lost uncle, whoever it may be, because they need this. And guys, until next time, this is Journey with Christian, D. Evans Podcast.